Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Greetings and welcome to episode 160 of By the Balls. John Davidson here with you. And for this episode, we've got a very special guest, the head coach of the England Wheelchair Rugby League team, Tom Coyd. Tom, how are you?
Doing great, John, and thank you for the invitation to be on By the Balls. It's great to be here.
No problem at all. I mean, it's 4 months since England won the World Cup. I guess how has that tournament changed your life in, you know, the 4 months since?
It's just been probably the best thing that me and the people closest to me have been involved in, really. I've made so many amazing friends along my journey in wheelchair rugby league and rugby league in general, actually. And to be alongside all those people through something as big and as emotional as a World Cup is something that not many people get to do. And obviously, being successful in it is even more special. So, yeah, it was just the best time. I wish I could do it all over again.
Well, you will have that chance in a couple of years, won't you, in 2025?
Yeah, it's not too far away. It's coming over the hill quite quickly, actually, from a coaching perspective. We haven't had too much time to celebrate now. It's about getting ready for the next one, so here we go.
And just on the World Cup last year, I mean, to do it alongside your brother Joe as well, one of the players in the team, I mean, that must have made it even more special.
Yeah, it definitely did. I mean, it wasn't without its challenges, and that's something I've reflected on since the World Cup and during it as well, really, is because, like, I've got two siblings. Me and Joe are just under 2 years apart, and 2 school years apart, and then my young sister Phoebe's like 7 years younger, so the gap between me and her is such that it's very much like a big brother little sister. But with Joe, we always kind of tussled growing up, you know. It was very much a sibling rivalry, probably like a lot of brothers do. And having to take on that kind of mentor coaching role through the England team really helped our relationship just grow, really, into something that was a lot more supportive and wanting, but like, each other to both win. So that was a happy byproduct, actually, and we're probably in the best place we've ever been now.
That's great. I mean, let's just go back to the beginning for a sec. Where did you grow up and how did you first get involved in rugby league?
Well, I've been coaching as long as I can remember, really, because when I was a child, we were based in Kent, where there was very little rugby league about 20 years ago, I'm talking. In that area of Kent, there was very little rugby league, and me and Joe, my brother, were just badgering Dad constantly, saying, "We want to play rugby league, we want to play rugby league," because we were always seeing him watch it on telly, and we were always being taken to games, but there didn't seem to be anything close to us.
Yep.
So after a few years of playing rugby union, and that not quite scratching the itch, if you like, we just followed Dad in creating Meadow Dragons, which is our amateur rugby league team. And when that was getting going, there was always a shortage of coaches and volunteers. So as a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old, I was always coaching the under-8s, the under-10s, the under-12s, helping Dad put the cones out, collect the balls. And that's where my coaching journey began, really. So I've been doing it as long as I've been aware of myself. One of the things that we added to the Meadow Dragons Club was Wheelchair Rugby League. And that came about because when the Great Britain Pioneers went away to the first Wheelchair Rugby League World Cup in Australia, they were hosted by the Parliamentary Rugby League Group, which my dad was invited to. And that was when he was first aware of this burgeoning sport, Wheelchair Rugby League, and just thought, this is the best thing ever, we've got to try and do it. So that's how Meadow Dragons got involved, and that's how I first got involved, and that was probably nearly 15 years ago now.
And how old are you now?
I'm 27, I'll be 28 in August.
Yeah, I mean, that's such a young... Obviously, you've had a long coaching career, as you just explained, but yeah, to be a World Cup winning coach at 27 is pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's not something that I ever expected to have on my CV at 27. It's a privilege, really, and it was a very steep learning curve. You know, having to coach a team through a tournament on that profile, and like none of our players were really prepared for being on a platform that big as well. You know, with that the amount of eyeballs that were on it, we all just did it together for the first time, and that was kind of what brought us together, really, just flying by the seat of our pants and enjoying it and working hard.
And was it a move to Leeds for university that you kind of got involved in the England setup? Was that how it came about?
Well, I went to Leeds Beckett and studied sports science for 3 years, and that's when I probably got a little bit closer to the rugby league scene in terms of what was going on with England.
Yes.
Ben Jones, who has a role as head of performance at the England Performance Unit, was actually one of my lecturers when I was at uni in 2014. And I was lucky enough to go on an internship at Leeds Rhinos when Brian McDermott was the head coach, so I got a little bit closer to professional rugby league then and England men's players. And then when I returned home from uni in 2017 with that experience, I was asked to come on to the England wheelchair side as an assistant coach with my sports science knowledge, because the team was just trying to get a little bit more professional and elite, I would say, so, like trying to build a bit more of a forward-facing approach. So That's when I first got involved as an assistant in 2017.
And then, obviously, you're appointed head coach in 2020.
Yeah. So, end of 2017, I came on. 2018, we trained with no fixtures. It was a fallow year. Which in some way probably was an easy entry for me. Like, you know, it was a lot of trial and error. We didn't have much pressure on the horizon. So, yeah, it was a fairly safe baptism, I guess. And then 2019, we had two amazing tours. First one to France, where we were the first team to ever beat France in France. And then we went to Australia in the November of that year for a two-week tour. Which was just amazing for rugby and for you know, life experience. And then 2020 got promoted to head coach. So it was a really, really good first few years in the team.
And I guess, you know, coming from assistant coach and then working your way to head coach, how in the past sort of 6-7 years, I mean, how much has the sport kind of grown and changed that you've seen?
Oh, it's so hard to put into words, really. It's a privilege to have seen it grow, and it helps me to appreciate it more, really. Like I say, we were on BBC Two prime time with over a million people watching us in like the best equipment you've ever seen, the best broadcast quality, all those fans cheering for us, and from first becoming involved with the England team, where we were doing our best in the corner of sports halls, and you know, we had been brought in by the England Performance Unit and the RFL to be an official England rugby league team, you know, under that England Performance umbrella. But it's a different game now. It's a different game, and the thing that the things that the athletes are doing on and off the field in terms of how they look after themselves and the product that they put out is, like, you can see where it's came from, but it's night and day, really. If you look at games from 10 years ago and,
yep.
and the quality of the World Cup final, it's amazing. It looks like a different sport. And, yeah, it's been a privilege to be part of the journey.
I mean, you've, as you explained, you've sort of been involved in the running game. You've played rugby union. You've obviously been involved in the wheelchair game for a long time now. What, I guess, appealed to you about the wheelchair game specifically?
Well, it's probably similar to, like, the experience that a lot of people have the first time they see wheelchair. It's, you know, you have this idea that, okay, it's obviously a disabled sport. And then somebody tells you that non-disabled people can play it as well. So your first reaction to that is, oh, that's a bit strange. That seems a bit unfair because, you know, disabled people shouldn't have to compete against non-disabled people. Then you get your head around the fact that it actually completely levels the playing field in a way that no other sport does. And the wheelchair users are actually benefited in a lot of ways because they're more used to using this crazy instrument, which is a wheelchair. And then you see people smashing the living daylights out of each other and falling on their faces on hard wooden floors, and you're wincing at the collision, and you're looking around going, is this safe? Is this right? And then, you know, you quickly realise that this is just rugby league in a wheelchair. All the things that I love about rugby league, you know, the collision, the competition, the aggression, they're all there. But it's opening it up to almost anyone who wants to be involved in a way that the running game can't. So, it takes all of the things that I love about running rugby league and just makes it even more inclusive. So, that's probably the thing that gets me most excited.
Yeah, and we talked about the World Cup, and it seems to have been sort of a real a circuit breaker for the wheelchair game, I guess. You know, the platform, the crowds, the TV coverage, the ratings. Did you sort of? I think I read something recently that, you know, people, someone sort of said within rugby league, they, you know, they knew how good the wheelchair game was, but I guess that wasn't as widely known, and the World Cup sort of changed that. Did you expect that sort of before the tournament, or has that kind of been a pleasant surprise how well it's been received and how sort of widespread the acclaim has been?
I definitely expected the rugby league community to sit up and take notice because I expected, like, rugby league fans to flick across the wheelchair games while that three-way World Cup was on and just think, oh, this is actually really good. This looks really similar to, or it looks just the same as the rugby league that I love. Let's get down and watch Leeds Rhinos wheelchair because I'm a Leeds Rhinos fan. But what I probably wasn't prepared for was the kind of widespread, you know, beyond rugby league circles interest. You know, I think the Sports Personality Awards in December, the BBC Spotty, that was the biggest profile rugby league's ever had at that awards, probably even including when Kevin Sinfield was a nominee for the award.
Yeah.
Which was, of course, because of the Rob Burrow acknowledgement, and rightly so, but also we had a massive kind of time slot or level of appreciation on stage for a good portion of that show, and I never expected anything like that to happen. But it's testament to how good the product is and how impressive the athletes are. So, rightly so. And I think that there's a sea change going on at the minute, isn't there, with sport, certainly in the Western world, in that, you know, it's not just male sport that makes the headlines anymore. It's women's sport. We took loads of inspiration from the Lionesses and their Euro success when we were going into our World Cup tournament. And I actually talked about, you know, us being able to do something similar for disability sport and inclusive sport. And that is, yeah, to a certain extent, what is going on right now.
Yeah. And I mean, going into the tournament as well, you know, England were one of the favourites, along with France, to win the whole thing, which obviously you did. But how is, I guess, coping with that pressure and expectation going? Because obviously, you know, when you're at home, you're in front of home crowds, but the expectation is to go out and win it. How difficult is that, sort of navigating that additional pressure?
Yeah, it was really tough. I think because France were world number one and reigning champions, that allowed us to just think of them as favourites, really.
Yep.
And we absolutely did the cliche thing, but the right thing of taking one game at a time. You know, there was no point in worrying about France, who were likely to be the final boss, if you like, if we didn't play well. Because the first round game against Australia was actually a really tough test. And although we held them to just one try, our team found that really, really tough. And if we weren't ready to play against Australia and we're worried about playing against France, then we would have underperformed and we could have easily got beat in the copper box, which was a great way to kick off the tournament. So after we got that one under our belts, it was a case of just building towards that final game, and we didn't want to play our best game in the first round. We wanted to get better and better, and I actually think we had some left in the tank even in that France game, but you know, you could probably tell the amount of pressure that was in that game. It was a typical grand final or final game where the bag of tricks goes away and it's just about completing your sets and defending well, which both teams actually did, and it was just us that managed to edge it.
Yeah, I mean, tell us about the final. Could it have been sort of any more dramatic or controversial?
It was just the perfect game. It was like, it was Disney scriptwriter stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We had the pantomime villain. We had both teams playing to an exceptional level. All the collisions were there. The atmosphere and the way that the pitch, you know, was created was just astounding. I gave the lads a virtual scrapbook the other day and split it up into like all the photos from kind of all the checkpoints throughout the tournament, and the way the pitch looks in that final, you know, the purple floor, the arena in Manchester is just astounding. So Rugby League World Cup as a company or a tournament director could not have done better with that.
And what did you make of the French linesman in the final?
Well, we had this narrative or this thing that we were talking about within our England team throughout the tournament, which was there's a character in the Band of Brothers series who's played by David Schwimmer called Captain Sobel.
Yes, I remember him.
Okay, right, yeah. Great. You know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
His kind of leadership tactic while the soldiers are training is to throw curveballs, really, and be completely absurdly unfair. And while we were having a bit of an easy ride through the tournament, you know, we were always playing well, things tended to go our way. I kept reminding the players, Captain Sobel will turn up at some point. There's a scene in the Band of Brothers where he tells them they're having an easy day, and he puts on a really nice meal for them that they're all enjoying, and then bursts in blowing his whistle halfway through the meal and sends them up the mountain running. So I showed him that clip before we went to play the final, and I said, he's coming in some form, don't worry. And that was what presented itself with some of the officiating. So luckily the lads were ready for it, and they were actually saying it to each other on the field throughout the game.
And obviously there was the comments too made by the French after the final about, you know, disability. How did they, I guess, sit? Were you surprised, disappointed? I guess what was your reaction to those comments?
I was definitely disappointed because I could recognise that we were showing this amazing product to a lot of people for the first time, and one of the key players in this wheelchair rugby league story being France just wanted to completely like slide tackle the narrative, really, and push it towards what their ideology or what their philosophy for the game is. I thought what the game deserved was just to talk about how good a contest it was, talk about how well both teams played, how well the tournament was put together, because it was a brilliant tournament.
Yep.
It was a shame really that they were selfish in just wanting to talk about what they wanted to push. I mean, that's the depth of the rivalry really between England and France. It's not just being closely matched on the field, but it's kind of opposing ideologies for what direction the sport needs to go in. And being that it was an England home World Cup and we came out on top, they were probably petrified that the winners were going to carry on writing history. So that was their play in the end.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the rivalry. Obviously, England and France, there's rivalry in every facet, and you know, history and sports no different. And obviously, in the wheelchair game, there's been a big rivalry between the two before this World Cup, but it seems like that's even just added another, you know, big chapter to that rivalry you have with the French.
Yeah, it's really growing into one of the great sporting rivalries, because, you know, France kind of took the variant and made it to a place where it was a genuine sport, and then once it came over to England, I would say that we've turned it into something that can be recognised as a, you know, well-organised, almost professional in the way that the sport is played and delivered. And through all the big tournaments since that first World Cup with the Great Britain Pioneers, it's always been England or France. England or Great Britain won the first ever one, and then France won in 2013 and 2017 at the World Cup. So it's technically two each, you could say. Mm. The Euros was played in 2015, which England won. And then the next time they get played, England will be looking to retain. So that would be us as a heavyweight boxer holding all the belts, if you like.
And you're playing them next month, aren't you? That should be pretty tasty.
The men and women are, but Wilshere's not playing.
Oh, okay, sorry. I thought you were.
No, we were looking to firm up some fixtures for the end of the year. France have the 2025 World Cup, obviously, so their all systems go. We're planning that at the minute, but we're hoping that there will be at least some test matches for the England wheelchair team before the end of the year.
I mean, yeah, the next time you do play them, that's going to be a very exciting and entertaining game, no doubt.
It will, and it deserves to be on a similar platform to the World Cup final. You know, it needs maybe not a purple pitch, but its own pitch, rather than badminton and basketball lines on the sports hall. It needs to be played in a arena where thousands of people can come and watch it. It needs to be on a TV channel where anyone can watch it, because wheelchair rugby league is a fully inclusive sport, and we want it to be on a fully inclusive broadcast platform too. In terms of our preparation, we want to cast a wider net. We want to see the new people that have come into the game, what they've got to offer, what they've got to offer England, because the only thing better than winning a World Cup is winning the next one.
Yeah, I mean, just lastly on the final, I mean, how were the celebrations after the World Cup final? I mean, you went and met some of the royal family, and obviously, you know, the game's on national TV, and to have that platform, yeah, how what was that like sort of after the game was over?
Yeah, it was epic. There's so many, like, core memories I've got and the players have got. We were staying at a hotel which was literally opposite the arena, so I think by the time we got out of there was a bit of an after party at the arena, and then we went back to our hotel bar with all our friends and family, and there was a few hundred people in this little hotel bar which didn't close until the early hours of the morning. and no one cared. There would have been people in there, granddads and great aunties, who had not seen that hour of the morning for a long time in a pub. But Yeah, it was just the adrenaline and the excitement that was going through the whole group was amazing. And then that carried through to Old Trafford. You know, we went in the best seats in the house at Old Trafford and got honoured on the pitch with all the stars of World Rugby League. There's some amazing photos of Tom Halliwell and James Tedesco and Kezzy Apps. Just the most amazing experience. And then there's been almost every 2 or 3 weeks there's been another amazing event. Like you say, we were hosted by Kate Middleton at the Palace. We went to the Sports Personality Awards, we went to the UK Coaching Awards. That was one thing we hadn't planned for, really, because we were so obsessed and focused on just getting that World Cup. When the consequences arrived, we were just, okay, let's be present in the moment, really, and don't make a fool of ourselves, wear the right things, don't get too drunk, don't be on the front of the sun for the wrong reason, and enjoy it. So that's what we've been doing ever since, really. We're just one round into the Wheelchair Super League season. It's time to get back to work.
Yeah, I mean, the Super League season is back up. I mean, it seems like across the board there's new wheelchair teams being started up, you know, Salford this year, I know Sheffield Eagles have got a team. I mean, it seems to be growing. I guess, what do you want to see next with the wheelchair game? What does it need to grow more and expand? You know, is it funding? Is it TV coverage? What's your take?
Like you said, there's now over 30 teams in the UK, which has gone up probably nearly 20% since before the World Cup.
Yep.
So the growth's absolutely there. We're hoping that by 2030 that will be closer to 50, which I think is definitely achievable. But in order to achieve that, you're right, we do need more coverage, more funding. The kind of rugby league foundations, they're charitable foundations. A lot of them are now turning their hand to wheelchair. I was at the Whole KR launch about a month ago, which was brilliant. Salford have started up, Sheffield, who are, I think, just under 2 years into their journey, are doing amazing things. So in terms of like growing across the rugby league family, that's definitely been set in motion. The thing that I'm most excited about is, again, in the same way that we had wider success for our coverage at the World Cup, I want to grow our wheelchair game bigger than just typical rugby league circles.
Yep.
We've got our Super League team, London Roosters, who have had an influx of new players. I would love to see more teams in those type of areas, the South West, London and the South East, the Midlands. These are the real growth areas that rugby league has always worked really hard to break into, but wheelchair probably has an amazing opportunity to do that in a different way. I think the socially responsible kind of like corporate interest angle is something that wheelchair rugby league breaks into really well, and we'll certainly be campaigning for companies and foundations who get excited about wheelchair rugby league to invest in resources for our game.
Yeah, I think it's a good point you make there, and it's a really interesting dynamic that obviously in the wheelchair game, the kind of the setup is different in that in the south of England it's quite strong and competing with the north of England, which is different to the men's game, and obviously internationally it's quite similar as well. You know, you have sort of Australia and New Zealand dominant in the men's game, but it's France and England that are leading in the wheelchair game.
Yeah, it's great. It's got a really good mix of being really connected to traditional rugby league values, and obviously the absolute fabric of the sport is really similar. But we've got an amazing opportunity to break into new markets. like you say, the first and second best teams are in Australia and New Zealand, which is a great freshen up for rugby league. Although Australia are getting better at a rate of knots, which we welcome. The USA competed at the World Cup, and we're excited to see what happens in that market. And some of our current best players in the England team are based south of London, let alone Leeds. So, I think we've just got a really, really good opportunity to make it a national sport, a European-wide sport, a global sport. Rather than, you know, just following the rugby league model that's there, I'm really excited for the new ideas that are coming in, and there's people, key stakeholders in our wheelchair game now that have really outside the box thinking, it could go in a really, really new and exciting direction.
Yeah, we mentioned before about 2025, but how do you? Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you've already started the process, but how do you plan for that tournament? Obviously, I imagine there'll be new players coming in the setup. We've seen James Simpson retire, one of the stalwarts of the team. But how do you prepare for that tournament? And you know, how many, I guess, games can you international games can you get sort of in the short window before the next World Cup?
Yeah, it's a great question, and one thing that we really want to secure is a regular international calendar, which is something that rugby league as a sport has struggled to.
That's right.
Has struggled to sort of get everyone to commit to. That's one of the great things that we have with our wheelchair game is it's a very clean slate. We aren't wedded to the kind of traditional ways of doing things. And we can have new ideas. We have, people who are willing to try different things. So we definitely want to have a regular international calendar that doesn't just get its act together 12 months out from the next World Cup. We want to play regular international test matches. We want to have a Euros tournament on the gaps between the World Cups. We want to play top-level wheelchair rugby league in different formats, so not just kind of following the Super League model, which is a great model, and I went to three Super League games last weekend and really enjoyed all of them, but I just think the indoor nature of wheelchair rugby league, the five-a-side, it's got a different angle to it, so... For us to get ready for the World Cup in 2025, we want our players to play on the biggest stages as often as possible, so they're used to handling the pressure. We want to grow their personalities really and make them, you know, UK stars, a bit like some of the netball women are doing really well. If you look at their circuit that they've got going there, they're getting fantastic crowds into places like the Copper Box and the NEC.
Yep.
And we'd love our wheelchair game to be able to go in that direction.
And just lastly on yourself, I mean, obviously you've got a full-time job outside of out of coaching England, but yeah, how do you manage to manage your time and get everything working? How does that is that difficult?
I just say I'm lucky to have a supportive girlfriend. I wear a lot of hats, and yep. I really enjoy all of them. I'm really lucky to have the roles that I do. Obviously, as well as the England head coaching role, I play and coach for Medway Dragons for the running game team. So we're training twice a week at the minute. I've got a full-time job Monday to Friday, kind of 9 to 5 like we all do, which is in the construction sector. And then I also work for a company called Man v Fat, which is like Weight Watchers meets five-a-side football, where I do some kind of well-being coaching and help men who are fat lose weight. which they all actually feed into each other. They all make me better at the other one. And sales is really similar to coaching. So I think I've got quite a really strong web of hats that I wear or roles that I work in. But it's definitely a juggling act. It's a good life skill, isn't it? Being able to do different things at the same time and do them all well. I'm not saying that I nail it all the time. And like I say, I'm lucky to have a girlfriend in Grace who is incredibly supportive and you know, lets me get on with it. I'm just learning things as I go, really. Flying by the seat of my pants, same as usual.
Well, definitely seems to be working for you, so keep up the good work. Really appreciate your time, Tom, and thanks for your time, and obviously wish you best of luck for what's ahead and the next World Cup.
Thanks very much. Pleasure to speak to you.
Thanks, Tom. Well, that's it for this episode. As usual, you can get us on all the usual podcast providers, iTunes, Spreaker, Spotify, Podbean, and the rest. We'll be back with another episode soon.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.